to order this morning. On the calendar, we have the first thing that we want to deal with is the Alaska Garden Week, which is SCR 9, and that is by Senator Green. Do we have a sponsor here?
I'm here, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'm here, Madam Chair.
Yes. Oh, please call the roll. We don't have a quorum.
Yes,
oh, yes, we do. Okay.
Representative Berkowitz? Representative Dyson?
Here.
Representative Elton? Representative Hodgins?
Here.
Representative Ivan? Representative Beebe?
Here.
Okay.
Here. Okay, do we have somebody here to present SJR 9? Can you tell us about it?
My name is Jason Williams. I'm staff for Senator Green, and Senator Green sponsored this resolution on behalf of the Valley Gardening Club, and it's a yearly resolution that they've sponsored. And it's just to, like the first line says, gardening instills an appreciation of nature and awareness of the value of conservation, and Senator Green would appreciate your support.
Do you have a motion to this bill? Dyson, motion to move SCR number 9 with individual recommendations and cast zero fiscal note. Any objections? Hearing none, bill's moved. Up is House Bill 55, Alaska Railroad. We are continuing from last week. We have a number of people online, and do we have a list of people signing up over here to be testifying? Do we have a sign-up sheet from here? Here comes. Okay.
Line up there. I couldn't get to it.
Okay. Thank you. I see that. On my other list that I have here is the Governor Sheffield is on a cell phone in Whittier. I guess that he probably isn't going to want to stay there forever. Maybe I better see. Are you out there, Governor Sheffield?
I don't think he's not
on. I'm going to be calling in later. Okay, so I just didn't want that cell phone to go dead. Anyway, let's start with the people here in Juneau. While we wait to get everybody on the teleconference out there, we have. According to my list here, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Mattsu, and Seward online or will be online, and we have some off-net people. So, Robert Casey, would you like to give testimony, please?
Hi, my name's Robert Casey. I'm with Alaska Railroad. I'm a 22-year employee of the Alaska Railroad. I've seen the inflation and constraints of operating in an approved federal budget, and I'm concerned about the loss of our own budget process, and I would like to know how your budget and audit committee thinks in including another layer of authority on the Alaska Railroad meets the criteria of less government regulation. The Alaska Railroad was set up to operate as a private corporation by the legislature in 1985. The railroad has people's interest at heart with oversight by the governor and the board of directors. The railroad is supposed to report on its profitability and its proposed budget to the legislature to prove it is operating with the best interests of the state and its people foremost. And I reiterate, why do you think more control of the Alaska Railroad is less government regulation? I would hope this committee would see the error of this proposed legislation.
Thank you. Have any questions, Representative Beasy?
Yeah, I'm sorry, sir. Your name was
Robert Casey.
Did you go by Robert or
Casey?
Casey. Okay. Your position with the railroad is?
I'm a plumber for Alaska Railroad.
Okay. Well, you're not involved in procurement or anything of that kind.
No, sir.
I'm not quite sure, and I won't want to question the sponsor of the bill's intent or motivation, but the complaint that comes out about the railroad is the public perception is that it's owned by the state of Alaska. It's a state of Alaska entity. And the public is disenchanted with some of the procurement practices of the railroad. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's not involved in the intent. But I think that all of the complaints about the procurement practices of the railroad could really be rectified internally. Now, I happen to agree with much of what you just said, because the state of Alaska can't even run government, sure can't run a railroad. But the fact of the matter is, it is owned by the state of Alaska, and the public does have, it feels, grounds to be incensed at some of the way they do business. Would you,
well,
have the employees of the railroad in your meetings with management spoken about the necessity of doing business in a manner that builds public support as opposed to builds ire with the public? For
actually, we had a discussion about that on our on-track council about, what, a month ago? And it was in concerning something we were doing in Klutna. And actually, most of our problems are PR problems, with because we're not doing enough PR with the people on the street and what's going on. As far as procurement process, we're under the state regulations, and we're supposed to do our operations under the state regulations. So, I mean, it's other than the fact that our PR problems are have been improving, haven't completely improved. You know, it's just, you know, it's a matter of communication with everybody.
Well, I think when you say PR, you're talking about communicating with the public.
Right.
Unless I'm horribly mistaken, the Alaska Railroad is not subject to state of Alaska procurement regulation. It is a set up as a private entity.
Correct. We still have to maintain some of the regulations. We either have to abide by the state or supply our own regulations equal to the state for procurement process.
The complaints that I get frequently have to do with the railroad procuring goods and services from outside vendors. It gets back to the old sacred cow of local hire, local business. In many cases, I think their procurements have been above board in that they, in all cases, I think they've been above board. I'm not aware of anything that isn't, but the fact is that by not offering a local bidder preference, which if they're following state code they can do, they raise the ire of a lot of local businesses. And when you don't do business locally, you basically deny yourself a natural constituency.
Yeah, now for instance?
I know of quite a few. The last one that comes to mind was about 2 years ago, they purchased a fleet of new work vehicles, pickup trucks, and they purchased those from outside the state of Alaska for a few dollars less than they could get them for.
I know about that one a little bit. I don't know a lot about it. I know that Alaska Sales and Service and Anchorage had a bid in. There were some other people that had bid in, and they went to the lowest bidder. As far as the rest of the stuff, you know, I know it was bid in Alaska before it went anyplace else. And there was a committee of people who made a decision on who was the best and who was awarded the bid.
Well, I know Mr. Blasingame, and I have had similar discussions with him that they need to be aware that they are perceived as a political entity, and they need to conduct their procurement. Another one that happened about 5 years ago that really raised the ire of a lot of people was some track repair. It was a lot of welding and whatnot. And it was work that could readily have been performed by some of the skilled people in the state. But it was, the specs were written for only firms with considerable amount of railroad experience to bid on it. And so it was limited to like two or three bidders in the lower 48 by virtue of pre-qualification. And there again, I talked to Mr. Blasingame about it, and he admitted that the railroad was technically over its head, did not know what it was trying to do, and therefore it wrote into the specs technical requirements for the background experience contractor, whereas they could have brought on board a internal quality control procedure and used Alaskan labor to do the work. Those kind of things build animosity, and when you're trying to do PR, I mean, it takes an awful lot of PR to overcome the negative PR that those things generate.
I understand what you're saying. I don't know about the welding operation.
I think that was about 1993 or 4 that happened.
No one else has any questions?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next we have Ed Rivera.
Hello?
Oh, hello, are you there? Would you wait just a moment? Yes, the governor has just called in, and Brad Phillips is in Whittier and wants to testify. Are you there, Brad Phillips?
Just a moment. I'll put him right on the line. Here he is.
Go ahead, Brad.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll make this as brief as I can. I'm well aware that many of the members of the legislature are not supportive of the tourism industry. However, I must remind everybody that it is the second or third most important industry as far as economic impact is concerned in the state of Alaska. It contributes more in dollars to the state treasury, and it employs somewhere between 27 and 30,000 people in the state. I've been in it for about 48 years, and my concern on the Senate bill, or House Bill 55, is that if it were to pass, it takes out of the hands of those who are trying their darnest in tourism to do some planning and to provide infrastructure that is absolutely vital if we are going to have an orderly development of tourism in the state of Alaska and continue to have it a good experience for the visitors that come here. In order to provide this infrastructure, it requires planning, it requires risk, it requires good management. This is not a bureaucracy, it's an operating company, the Alaska Railroad, and quite unique in the United States. And as an example, if that bill had passed a couple years ago, then this brand new service that we're putting into Whittier this year for passengers directly out of Anchorage would never have happened. The long-range planning includes the acquisition of equipment, all kinds of things that those who understand what business is and what business has to do to survive will see that to put this in a bureaucracy is not the answer to this. It'll destroy the usefulness of the Alaska Railroad, in my opinion, for tourism development, because it just won't happen. And I just really appreciate your taking a few minutes to listen to us before our battery goes out here on the train. We're headed into Whittier this morning, and I would be glad to answer any questions I could, but we've got a lot on the line financially in our planning, and I know the Alaska Railroad has some excellent plans for the development of not only freight service, but passenger service, and those plans have to be long range. And my 17 years in a legislative capacity, I know you can't commit another legislature ahead of you, so it, by its very nature, makes it impossible to make some of these plans to go into debt when necessary, and all the other things that businesses are quite well aware of. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips, for calling in. Okay, now, Ed Rivera, here in Juneau.
Good morning. My name is Ed Rivera. I'm president for the Alaska Railroad Workers. I represent 240 employees at the Alaska Railroad. The employees I represent, their families, and most of the people that I know within the community are against this bill. To allow this bill to go forward and the changes in here would be detrimental to the Alaska Railroad and the business we operate. A prime example that I would like to give you here is recently we just struck a $15 million contract with BP. That contract was hinged on the ability to spontaneously react and purchase our lease, actually, $500,000 worth of cars to keep us stable, lease program on our cars, which offset the prices to BP, where before they were fluctuating. If we come under the Budget and Audit Act here, I don't believe we would have the ability in the future to make a spontaneous reaction to business concerns out here within the community. Easily a contract like this would be lost. A contract of $15 million over 5 years does not seem like a great deal to the legislation, but it does put money into the state. In the operation of the railroad, it bolsters our income, our profit. And we can't see where coming under this act is beneficial to anybody. Ironically, I walked into this office and I seen a flow chart hanging on the wall over here that dramatically fits this situation. You know, I can't understand why we're trying to fix something that hasn't broke yet. You know, basically I'm asking you to consider this bill and not allow it to go through as it is.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for coming forth to testify today.
Thank you.
We could go now to, we have off-net for Phyllis Johnson, Bill Huprick, and Brian Henshaw. Are you all together in one place?
Yes, Madam Chairman. This is Phyllis Johnson. We are in an office here in Anchorage together. And Bill Huprich and I, both attorneys for the railroad, are basically here to answer questions. Mr. Henshaw has a statement to make, and I believe Mr. Huprich has some commentary on some earlier questioning that might be of use to the committee. And I will just stand by, and if there are any questions I can answer, I will do so.
Okay, first we'll take Brian Henshaw's testimony then.
Yeah, my name's Byron Henshaw. I'm a mechanic for the Alaska Railroad and a member of the Machinists Union. I'm against this bill for a few reasons. I and my co-workers take pride in maintaining and being part of the Alaska Railroad. This is why I was upset when the discussion of selling the railroad for what was paid for it came up. I did not want to see our hard work and improvements made to be lost because of they weren't realized when they were talking about selling it, what was already put into it since it was purchased. Likewise, I would not feel the same commitment to the railroad if all that mattered was in what was in the budget. When times are good, we push for improvements we feel we need. When times are poor, we improvise to make things work. It is a challenge to keep the railroad profitable while following the safest means possible, and a challenge and a commitment I wish to keep. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Bill Huprich, did you have some comments regarding earlier questions?
Yes, I did, Madam Chairman. My name is Bill Huprich, and I'm one of the railroad's lawyers. One of the areas I oversee, in addition to finance, is also our procurement function. And I have a couple comments with respect to questions Representative Veazey had. The Alaska Railroad, by law, is required to have procurement rules that are substantially equivalent to the state procurement code. In reality, the railroad's procurement rules are nearly identical to those found in the state procurement code. And this includes an Alaska bidder's preference that we offer to Alaska bidders. An Alaska bidder has a 5% preference on all of our procurement actions. That means if an Alaska bidder bids 5% more than an outside bidder, the award goes to the Alaska bidder, even though it costs the corporation an additional 5%. I'm not familiar with the track welding issue Representative Veazey discussed, but I know right now we went out and bought track welding equipment, and that work is done by our own employees currently. I'm prepared to answer any questions on procurement or on the financing issue that I addressed in my letter to you.
Okay, Representative Dyson has questions.
Thank you. As I understand it, the Department of Administration is in the midst of a big project to completely rewrite the procurement codes and policies. Are you all having an active part in that revision process?
That's the first I've heard of it, Representative Dyson. To my knowledge, we have not been contacted and are not aware of that.
All right, and I would encourage you to proceed with that. My own experience is that the state procurement system is highly centralized and pretty awkward for particularly for organizations running field work. I'd really encourage you all to pursue that, and if it doesn't get revised, to opt out at your earliest opportunity and write your own. Thank you.
We'll follow up on that, sir.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Huffrich? Then, yes, Representative Beebe?
Yeah, Mr. Huffrich, I cannot remember the details, but I received a call from a constituent about 6 weeks ago or so regarding a procurement, and I believe it had to do with I'm thinking it had to do with new windows for a building. I'm not positive, but would you mind if I had this person give you a call?
No problem whatsoever. My phone number is area code 907-265-2461.
We got that. Thank you. Okay, let's go now to Fairbanks. And in Fairbanks, we have Donald McPhee.
Good morning, Representative James.
Good morning.
My name is Donald McPhee. I live at 1049 Northwood Lane, Fairbanks, 99712. My occupation is at Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm taking annual leave to testify. I'm also a director of the Fairbanks Historical Preservation Foundation, which has been, as you know, actively involved in relocating and saving the old coal bunkers. I would just like to state a couple things about the bill. It seems to me to be folly to expect a privately owned corporation, which is currently operating as a privately owned corporation under a calendar fiscal year budget and is making a profit while meeting community needs, to become just another state agency operating under the state fiscal year budget when funds run out on June the 30th. I am a budget coordinator for the DOT and PF and handle an $11 million budget myself. Fortunately, DOT and PF's operational peak periods occur in the winter. The railroad's peak period of activity, both tourist and freight hauling, occur in May, June, and July. Once again, if a private corporation such as BP comes out with a request to say, we're going to need you to put on 10 new cars to sustain what we're going to do, how can the railroad respond to that if that request comes in May or June when their funds are going to run out on June the 30th? Under their current calendar year budget, this would be no problem for the railroad. I think the legislation as read would simply tie the hands of a publicly owned private corporation that is doing the job that the state of Alaska set it up to do, i.e., it is responding to the economic needs of the Alaskan public. It's been instrumental in setting up here in Fairbanks land sales that have resulted in an economic development of the north bank of the Chena River, i.e., it is responding to the direct community wishes that are not necessarily involved with pure profit making. And I speak for the Fairbanks Historical Preservation Foundation. Jeanette James and Peter Kelly both are familiar with this whole thing. Since October, we have resolved the problem of the lease with OK Lumber, allowing OK Lumber to expand their facilities on the private side, and at the same time, allowing us to save and relocate the historic coal bunkers, a National Historic Landmark. Just recently, the railroad board, acting under an active board of directors without a CEO, responded to our needs and has helped us resolve the problem of relocation and moving the bunkers extremely successfully. To that effect, the Fairbanks North Star Borough had issued a resolution supporting that. The railroad responded. I just simply think that we're throwing out the baby with the bathwater here. I do not think that pending transfer to private ownership of the railroad is read in the original act, it makes a lot of sense to turn a private corporation into a state agency at a nonprofit basis. How can they possibly make a profit if they're asked to operate just like all the rest of the state agencies? I would also like to remind everyone that the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly passed a resolution against House Bill 55 fairly recently I would respectfully ask all the members of your committee, Representative James, to vote against this bill and not allow vote for further action in the House. And thank you very much for listening to my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. McPhee.
If you have questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Dennis Wolfer in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, I'm Dennis Wolfer. I'm president of CNR Pipe and Steel Incorporated. We're a business in South Fairbanks located at 401 East Van Horn Road. We're a customer of the Alaska Railroad. It's that reason I'm here to voice my opposition to HB 55. Give you an idea of how important we feel, or how much business we do with the Alaska Railroad, how important it is to our business. Last year we shipped about 7,000 tons of scrap steel and surplus steel products southbound on the railroad. We brought about 400 tons of new steel products north. In 1997, we expect to ship at least as much south. We have already shipped about 800 ton north, and we'll probably ship in the neighborhood of 1,200 ton north. I'm opposed because I feel this bill would be potentially detrimental to my business. I was a customer, or attempted to be, a customer of the railroad when it was run under federal management. It was abominable. We were a frustrated customer. Today, the Alaska Railroad Corporation is responsive to my needs. It has improved steadily. In recent years, it's a better and better run business. Its equipment is better. Its equipment is more available. Its service is better. Most important is the attitude of every person at the railroad is one that says, we want your freight. I note that in the last 5 years or so, Alaska, particularly Interior, has enjoyed steady economic growth. We as Alaskans are heavily dependent on the freight links to the lower 48. The Alaska Railroad Corporation plays a very strong role in that link. I think it had a very strong role in that growth. In closing, I feel the Alaska Railroad isn't broke. Please don't fix it. Thanks for the opportunity to give the testimony, and I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Wolfer. We'll go now to Anchorage and pick up Jeff Lowenfels.
Yes, Madam Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Jeff Lowenfels, and I am President and CEO of Yukon Pacific Corporation, and I'm also President of Commonwealth North. In my capacity as President of Commonwealth North, I sent a letter to all the legislators last month expressing the position of Commonwealth North regarding the long-term need for an independent and a competitive Alaska Railroad. Today I testify as president of Yukon Pacific Corporation, and although some may call me optimistic, I am quite convinced that we're going to have an LNG project coming from Alaska to serve the Asian countries that Yukon Pacific and the others have targeted as potential markets. And I know that the legislature has worked very, very hard and continues to work very hard to develop a formula to make sure that the state of Alaska is a competitive place for an LNG project. And a number of the potential participants have indicated that they will not invest in this project unless they see a very competitive and stable environment in which to make that investment. And from my perspective, Madam Chairman, a stable Alaska Railroad is part of that formula. We will clearly be using the Alaska Railroad. It will be a major part of the infrastructure to deliver pipe up to the Fairbanks area, and from thence, obviously, up into the right-of-way. And there is no question that if that railroad cannot act on a competitive basis, if it cannot contract, as we've discussed and as we've been hearing people discuss today and on Saturday, then it cannot be part of that formula. We need a very safe and a very efficient Alaska Railroad. And we believe that the railroad now is operating in a fashion that would encourage anybody to make the investment in an LNG project based upon that component of the formula. So we would urge the legislature not to take action on this bill, to leave the railroad alone, and to make sure that it is not influenced by political pressures or the necessities of having to act like a state agency. And that's not to say that acting like a state agency is good or bad. It's just that for a railroad, which would be serving a large-scale LNG project, it just simply wouldn't make any sense. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Well, we could go to Matt Sue and pick up Ernest Brannon.
Good morning, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on HB 55. I believe this bill is flawed and goes against the basic principles of private business operations, principles under which the Alaska Railroad operates. As a private business owner myself, I know there are certain required operational necessities. One, flexibility to respond to market conditions. Two, flexibility to purchase equipment and supplies to operate when markets demand it. Three, must be competitive in the marketplace. Four, must control capital assets to collateralize operations. Five, must maintain sufficient cash flow to operate in a competitive marketplace. And six, must provide a service or commodity desired by the public. Now, having said all that, state government in its normal role is not designed to do any of that. For example, it doesn't respond to markets. Its budgets are not flexible enough to respond to changing market conditions. It does not compete in the marketplace. It does, however, control public capital assets. However, there is a long, drawn-out public process before they can be utilized. And it does maintain a cash flow for normal government operations. However, it is not operating in a competitive atmosphere where profit is the motive. There's no flexibility to change quickly like a private business does to respond to market conditions. It doesn't provide service in competition with others, nor does it provide commodities. Conclusion, the Alaska Railroad should not be put in budget competition with schools, hospitals, prisons, and so forth. It would probably lose and would have devastating effects on businesses now dependent upon it. The railroad as it exists today provides Alaska the best of all worlds. The state still owns all of its assets. It pays its own way and as well as makes a profit, and it operates as a private entity without a burden on the taxpayers and provides the necessary public and private service. To me, this bill is contradictory to the philosophy of this legislature, and here are some examples why. This legislation wants to privatize prisons. It wants to create a ferry authority in Southeast Alaska. It wants to privatize some schools and auto license and so forth. As a private citizen, I'm getting a mixed message. Besides, I travel around the state a lot, and I've never heard anyone suggest changing the Alaska Railroad to operate any different than it does today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we can go back to Fairbanks and get Dave Johnson.
Good morning, Representative James.
Good morning.
This is Dave Johnson. I'm the manager of Alaska West Express here in Fairbanks. I've been dealing with the Alaska Railroad for the past 10 years. We do it on a daily manner, and I think that this bill should be defeated, that there really is no basis for it. Over the years, the continued improvement of the railroad to the customer's needs has been very dramatic, and their efficiency improves every year. For the state to get involved in it, I think would be any more than what they are. It's just a means of trying to kill the railroad from where they are today. They respond to the customer. They're doing an excellent job. Their efficiency has changed dramatically over the years. And if they do have any small problems, as any company does, that can be rectified within their own means. I think this should be left alone the way it is and not funky with it. Thank you.
Thank you. And John Williams?
Yeah, good morning, Representative James, Madam Chair, and other members of the committee. My name is John D. Williams, or Jack Williams. I'm the founder and executive vice president of the Fairbanks Historical Preservation Foundation. I reside at 1119 Second Avenue, Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm not here to speak in any other capacity than that as a private citizen. I've been listening to all the testimony, and I really don't see much that I could add. I am in complete agreement with the people who are against this bill. I'm very much against it. To me, it simply does not make any sense, and something that's been said three or four times, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it doesn't squeak, don't grease it. The Alaska Railroad, in my experience, has been extremely responsive, especially over the last few years, to the needs of the people of Alaska, particularly to the growing industry of tourism. I echo Don McPhee's words when he says that the fiscal operation of the railroad could be hamstrung by being tied to the budgetary actions of the legislature. It doesn't make any sense to take a successfully operating, profitable, quasi-public, quasi-private, whichever way you want to say it, corporation, and put it under a new mantle when it is doing what it is supposed to do, what it is mandated to do. It is serving the needs of all the people. I would like to mention one item. Of course, we have the coal bunkers up here, and we're very grateful for the railroad's help. They're critical to what we're doing. But a couple of weeks ago, I was down in Cantwell, and I attended a Denali Assembly, Borough Assembly meeting. And one of the areas of concern down there was the railroad property upon which a subdivision is built. And the time is running out on that subdivision to go way beyond amortization period needed to finance a house. Well, Governor Bill Sheffield was down there. And he addressed that matter to those people down there, in which I thought was very, very genuine, and he meant every word he said. And here's the chairman of the board and the acting CEO of this big corporation, the Alaska Railroad Corporation, with a very, very personal contact in that relatively small community. And I thought, this is the meaning of cohesiveness. This is what it's all about. Serving Alaska, serving Alaskans, and taking the time and trouble to do it. Their motivation is not totally profit. However, they are very successful at being profitable. I have nothing more to add. I am strenuously against this bill. It just simply does not make any sense. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. And we also have Joseph Fields.
Good morning, Representative James and members of the committee. Yes, there's not much for me to add to these the chorus you heard here this morning, other than to say that the project that I'm involved with, the Denali Railway System, has been working with the Alaska Railroad for some time, and has received a great deal of attention and direct response whenever we've wanted it. We've seen this operation as a model of management operation for other facilities in the state. This bill doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of going back toward a centralized economy. That simply doesn't wash these days. And I would urge you strongly to not move this bill or defeat it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else left on the teleconference that wish to testify that I haven't called on?
Representative James, this is Charlie Bodie in Fairbanks.
Oh, yes. Go ahead, Charlie.
Good morning. I'm Charlie Bodie. I'm Vice President of Government Relations with Coosa Valley Coal Mine. I guess I won't hold up your committee much longer, Madam Chairman. Coosa Valley obviously has a very good working relationship with the Alaska Railroad and feels that this bill could in many ways put that relationship in jeopardy. Again, many people have alluded to the fact that the Alaska Railroad needs to operate in a very businesslike manner to respond quickly to the needs of the customers they're serving. The changes that this bill would purport to do could severely hamper the relationship as it now works. And for that reason, we could not be in support of the current legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Charlie. Is there anyone else out there that I've missed on teleconference who wants to testify on House Bill 55? Hearing none, is there anyone left here in the room that wishes to testify on this bill? Representative Martin?
I don't think you have enough to pass it anyway, but I would like to bring up a couple questions.
We weren't planning on passing it anyway, Representative.
I had assumed that. Next year, no, it's 10 years from now. But I do think it's important to bring up very important things. We, as a legislature, have to make up our mind, do we want this to be a private enterprise, which I wholeheartedly support, private free enterprise, or should we follow the Constitution? From the very beginning, it was very clear that we are going astray from the Constitution, Article 9 and Article, Section 7 and Section 13. This is a public identity. This is public property. It's much like ADA. It's much like the Alaska Housing Corporation, Mental Health Corporation. They're still fighting that they want to be free and out of the Executive Budget Act because they feel that they are private. They said they're endowed by Congress. Well, we made a special deal with them. You know, Mental Health now has a separate part of the budget, much larger than the railroad would ever be. But that is to uphold our responsibility for those who are defending the Constitution. In this case, we do have the right to make sure that Mental Health Corporation works with their patients, works with the public citizens. Same way with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. They fought it for a long time. And eventually, all the fears that you hear in the day, the devastation of the housing industry, the devastation of the employees, the federal people will be on the welfare lines, everything, every fear that you hear today about the railroads, the same fears that have been brought up about these other things. But I think that we as legislators, as long as it is a public asset, as long as it is public land, we are responsible. If we want to privatize it, and this is part of the problem when it was tried 2 years ago to privatize it in any way that it can be, they absolutely oppose that we are a public corporation, we are the public, don't give Alaska's private property away, don't give Alaska this and so on. Now the opposite has happened. Since they don't want it to be privatized, then let's make it a public corporation and put it under the Constitution, as it says, put it under the Constitution, and we will be the overseers for the public. There won't be any devastation. The $85 million budget that the Alaska Railroad has is like a drop in the water compared to most of our corporations when we look into the Permanent Fund Corporation, when we look into ADA and so on. But it is our responsibility whether we like it or not. And I think all the fears that the railroad employees have about losing their jobs, about the fear of the world falling down, completely wrong. This railroad, in my mind, is not going to improve at all without federal, state money, or private money. And the real lucky in the last few years was Senator Stevens, through some mechanism, found a way to give them more money, which shows up as profit. So I think it really matters, Madam Chairman, one way or the other. We as legislators should make up our mind. Will it be private, which I hope it would be someday, and let it be run purely at private industry, let it expand, let it get into the Canadian connection, whatever it wants. It's not going to happen under the public concept. If it is a public asset, then I think we have the absolute responsibility of putting it under the Executive Budget Act following the Constitution of the State of Alaska.
Let me ask you a question, Representative Martin.
Madam Chairman, if I could respond to that when you get to the
room. Okay, is this Governor Sheffield?
Yes.
Okay, wait a minute. I have a question of Representative Martin. The case in point of the $15 million contract with BC, which was dependent upon getting $500,000 worth of leased cars to be able to conclude that, under the Executive Budget Act, how would that be handled?
I think it'd be much like, and I'm not a super expert on private business, but I think it'd be much like.
I'll agree to that.
Right.
Okay.
But it's much like we allow ADA to do private enterprise deals with public funds. It's much like we do with the Mental Health Corporation, where they contract.
Well, do they have that kind of a time frame?
They do. Look at the time frame that the Permanent Fund Corporation has. Instantly, they're making $100 million deals. This is not going to hold them up at all and making their normal day-to-day activity. The other day, they said we will put them on a calendar. We'll be strictly calendared. It's not. All these corporations we have operate just like any other person with flexibility from year-to-year contracts worth 10 years, 5 years, 20 years. It's not going to limit them by a time, certain like July 1st of the budget year or July December 31st of the calendar year. There's no limitations there. And that kind of fear that we will hold up their operation because the budget stops on July 1st or starts on July 1st, it just... a pseudo-crisis fear.
But Representative Martin, currently in the budget process that we're going on, there are some corporations out there that fear for their life because when the legislators are sitting around a table, they don't know what the end result's going to be. And if someone makes a little faux pas out there, then it seems to me like that's the first thing that the legislature wants to do is cut their budget.
Well, that's the give and takes that, you know, if we want to make them private, please, I beg you, make them private. Governor Sheffield, buy the railroad. Mr. Brinkley said the other day he'd like to buy it. Please, Mr. Brinkley, buy it. Do what you want. I don't know those answers, you know.
Madam Chair, if I can interject briefly, the last couple of years.
Hey, say who you are first.
My name is Chris Knight. I'm a staff for Representative Terry Martin. A couple of years ago, the railroad actually was faced with the exact same situation. Anchorage Sand and Gravel wanted to increase their production, hauling sand and gravel back and forth between Fairbanks and, I guess, around the general Anchorage area. They came to the railroad and said they needed to increase their production, and the railroad didn't have the cars to do it, and they didn't have the money to go out and buy the cars. Anchorage Sand and Gravel actually had to buy their own cars. We're not talking about a few cars, we're talking about 40 cars, have them barged up under their own expense. And currently, they still own those cars, which are used by the Alaska Railroad Corporation. So I think we've faced these situations before under the current system. Whether it's been effective, you can ask Anchorage Sand and Gravel. I don't think they expected to incur that extra expense. I think under the Executive Budget Act, they would have maybe a greater avenue, or we would have a greater avenue of providing greater assistance for.
I appreciate your optimism, but I would think that it would be very difficult to, in very quick hurry to get any kind of an authorization. Governor Sheffield, did you have a response?
Well, yes, I do, Representative James. You know, I've been doing this for a couple years now, listening to the testimony from people that never ran a business and never made a payroll. And it's really... it's really too bad. You know, let's just take them one at a time. And I know better than that because I was there once. You know, and you can't obligate one legislature to the next. And so let's just take them one at a time. You know, we're a rolling company. We're a public corporation dealing with the private sector who change their plans and have different needs throughout the year, from one month to the next, from one spring to the next spring. We don't know what all those changes in plans are going to be at all times. So what we're able to do is we write our own budget, we're able to move money around within the budget to respond to those people's needs, whether it be a small customer or whether it be Dennis Wilfer is seeing our pipe that hauls more pipe sometimes, less pipe, more steel balls for Fort Knox, less depend upon the season. We take on a contract like with BP, and we do need 34 flatbed special cars to haul that pipe, and so we obligate ourselves on a lease arrangement for those cars, and we make money on that and on hauling that pipe. 3 to 5 years to do that.
Governor Sheffield, you're breaking up.
Better now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. I just have to turn a little bit to the left. We're sitting here in 40.
Answer that question.
So how would we, Madam Chairman, are you going to have another hearing?
I had not planned to, Governor Sheffield. I planned to conclude this one pretty quickly.
Okay, well, let me just say this. I'll try to wind down here as fast as I can. But, you know, all these things really need to be answered and concisely so people understand it. But we could not contract and do those things under the Executive Budget Act. We couldn't have a long-term contract with MAPCO. We couldn't have a long-term contract with Usabelli. Those people are in business for a long period of time. We couldn't have a contract to run our train to Whittier to take care of the small cruise ship business in Whittier. We couldn't run a contract to take care of the passengers out of Stewart and run them to the airport. We can't contract for long term. If we needed to borrow money from a bank, how would we borrow money and guarantee we're going to pay it back 2 and 3 and 4 years now when the legislature changes every 2 years? Hopefully it'll change. And how can we run our business? How can the legislature be exempt from all of the railroad's activities when if you want control? With control comes liability. You don't have any liability now. States that in all of the acts, the Transfer Act, the state laws. But with control, you're going to get it. You're going to get liability. And also, Madam Chairwoman, you know, they make a poo-poo out of this calendar year stuff, but all of our private sector people are on calendar year. We're on a calendar year. It's not that easy to change over. I'm telling you, it's not that easy to change over. We don't have the staff to be able to do it. Now then, we get money from the federal government 2 years in a row. We hope to get some more money in the next 5 years. We'll be written into the ICT, which the FRA administrator spoke about on Saturday. The next T is what they call it. And there's $2.5 billion out there goes to passenger railroads around the country, but we never qualified. And so now we qualify. I think we should be applauded for that, not condemned for getting money from the federal government. They owed it to us. And so we get that money now, and we hope to get it for the next 5 years. And why not? That's the law. The president put it in his bill, $178 billion for rail service in America, and we might as well get our share of that money. So from safety to the operations to being flexible to respond to our customers, it's very important. I tell you, you know, and I can prove it to you, unless you change the Executive Budget Act entirely, what we're going to happen is if we're under that, we'll start to be forced to lose money. How can we contract for barge service from Seattle to Whittier? How can we do all these things and still stay in business under the Executive Budget Act? So what happens, Representative James, we just start to lose money and then we go broke and then we devalue the asset and we'll be in just like it was when it was under federal ownership. So it doesn't make any sense to the people of Alaska. I don't know why it makes any sense down there. So I ask you to think about it long and hard. If you want legislative oversight, think of another way. Let us come and talk to you once a month if we could. We display we're an open company, and all you're doing is just raising hell with our employees, the unrest of this company, and it makes it very, very difficult. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Dyson, you had a question earlier. Was that for Representative Martin? And Randy Welker's here, too. I have some questions for him.
No, for Governor Sheffield?
For Governor Sheffield. Governor Sheffield, Representative Dyson has a question.
Yes.
Good morning, Bill. I'm asking these questions on behalf of Representative Hodgins, who had to go to another meeting. He asked, when was the last time the Railroad Board declared a bonus and compensated employees and board members or officers of the railroad with a bonus?
In 1996, the Railroad Board gave a bonus to all of the non-represented employees of the Alaska Railroad, since there had been no increase in salaries since 1992. So that's the answer to that.
And as a follow-up question, sir, how many times has the board declared a bonus for some group of employees or board members?
That was the only time, to my knowledge, because the representative employees get their normal increases through union negotiations. The non-representative employees hadn't had anything happen to them in increases since 1992, so there was a one-time bonus given about the middle of last year.
Thank you, sir. And a final question, Governor Sheffield. When the railroad is competing with private enterprise, and I assume that must be the trucking industry, what criteria do you use to establish a price?
We file a tariff on everything we do, and that's a public tariff. Everybody knows what the tariffs are. And well, I'm not an expert in this area. They are competitive tariffs, and it's controlled by federal law.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Randy Welker, you have to answer some. Could you answer some questions, please?
Chairman, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
Could I just add one thing? This is John Binkley from Fairbanks, and I've been observing and listening, but since I testified Saturday, didn't want to take up further committee time. But in response to Representative Dyson's question, I think he mentioned in the question that the management and board of directors, and I just want to clarify that the board of directors does not receive compensation other than the stipend that's mandated in the act, and has never received any bonus. The bonus that former Governor Sheffield was referring to was strictly for upper-level management in lieu of any raises since 1992, as he indicated. But the board of directors certainly has never, ever received any bonus.
Okay, thank you. Randy, you want to answer some of the questions? Tell us who you are first on the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Randy Welker, the legislative auditor. I'd be happy to either answer specific questions first or make a couple brief comments and then ask the questions that you're
looking for. Okay, go ahead and make the brief comment first.
Madam Chair, not to swim upstream here in the course of opposition to this bill, but I guess I'd like to briefly speak to what I see as the motivation and the purpose behind a desire to bring the railroad under the Executive Budget Act. The Alaska Railroad is the only entity of state government that is not subject to the Executive Budget Act. Right now, what we're faced with is the only legislative involvement we've had over the last quite a few years has been through the audit process. Usually in that audit, when we're at that point in time, someone is already disenfranchised and has gone to some legislator that has brought that forward. So we go in, we do an audit, and we make the recommendations for improvement to those problems. What we think is more important is to get the cart behind the horse here again and provide the oversight up front. The Executive Budget Act, there are two principal pieces to the Executive Budget Act. One is the act of appropriating itself, and there's a lot of concern been voiced about that process. I think if you look at the language the House Finance Committee put into the budget this year on the railroad, it simply says all the money that's necessary to run the railroad is appropriated to the railroad for the purposes of the railroad. So that is a very wide open appropriation. It would cover any of these contingencies that have been brought up today, the urgent need to go out and increase spending of any nature, because it is the amount necessary to operate is appropriated and is available to the railroad. The Senate Finance Committee amended the bill to take debt service out of consideration in the Executive Budget Act, so that is not a part of it from the Senate's perspective, so that the debt goes on outside of the Executive Budget Act. Similar to, and to correct some previous testimony, ADA, certain corporations, certain aspects of their operation are not subject to the Executive Budget Act. ADA and their bonding activity, that, with the exception of those bonds of large dollars that require legislative approval, the debt service and aspects of that sort, AHFC's debt service payments, I don't believe, are subject to the Executive Budget Act. But the other part of the Executive Budget Act is what I believe is the important element here, and that's the oversight that the legislature provides. It provides a mechanism. It is the mechanism we have established for all of state government to provide the communication between entities of state government and the legislature. The railroad is wholly owned by the state, and I believe the legislature has a certain responsibility to provide some oversight of the railroad. I don't believe asking someone to come down and talk to the legislature while they're in session through the formal structure that we have set up for the budget is an onerous request on anybody. So I think it's that oversight and that discussion, the ability to express concerns to the board, to the executive officers of the corporation, express them up front so that we're airing those things out in the open, and before we end up to the point where we're in doing audits and that. The communication in the past, I don't believe, and I believe Governor Sheffield would concur, that in the past the communication between the railroad and the public and between the railroad and the legislature has not been what it should be. I continue to credit the governor for making improvements in those relationships over the last few years. I'm very hopeful that the new CEO, when we have one on board, will pursue and continue that effort to be open and communicating to the public and the legislature. But I think that executive budget process is a mechanism that allows the legislature to communicate, and it is the formal process that we have in place for all other entities of state government. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, so my first question is on, I consider the railroad different than Housing Finance and ADA because of a different role. They do a daily contact with customers. It's a totally different function than Alaska Housing or ADA, which are in the banking business. And I don't think that you can say the banking business is necessarily like a transportation business. Transportation business is different. Let me ask you the question about the fiscal year. If we appropriated their budget, they're on a calendar year, then all of a sudden, and are you saying the language that just says all the money that's needed for the railroad is appropriated is the language we currently use?
That is the language, Madam Chair. That is the language that was added this session to the budget, the front section of the budget. For the Alaska Railroad. Where that's at in conference right now, I'm not certain. But that language was in the version of the budget that the House passed out.
And you're saying that wouldn't change under the Executive Budget Act?
There's nothing in the Executive Budget Act that requires the railroad or the Executive Budget Act is silent as to fiscal year. There's nothing in the Budget Act itself making them subject to the Budget Act that would mandate a change to the state fiscal year.
But wait a minute. I don't understand you. You say they put that language in the budget. You don't know whether it's going to come out or not. That authorizes any amount that the railroad needs is appropriated. They're doing that now when they're not under the Executive Budget Act. And supposedly that's okay to put that language in there. And then if we put them under the Executive Budget Act, the same language is there. Then why do we need the Executive Budget Act to do it if we can put the language in there without it?
Because Madam Chair, I believe the front section in Budget Act takes care of the appropriation side, but the Budget Act drives more of the oversight, the preparing, the submitting, the process of communicating and discussing that budget is more driven by the Budget Act. There's nothing in the Budget Act that mandates an appropriation. The Budget Act process is more that communication, that process.
Let me ask you, if all you want them to do is to come down here during a legislative session and make an extensive report on the railroad, they can do that now.
Yes, they can, Madam Chair.
So putting them under the Executive Budget Act won't change that either, would it?
I believe putting them under the Executive Budget Act brings them into the formal process that we have put in place for legislative oversight. That's
well,
not to say that there could be some alternative oversight process.
Let me just, I want to share with you my concern, and my accounting background is different than yours. You know, for all of these years, I've been working as self-employed, taking care of small business, and helping them to make it go, understanding how small private business operates. And I've been with following the railroad very, very closely for the last 5 years. I have made some changes in the way the railroad does business because I've been a voice from the public and from the legislature to them and say, here's a problem that is brewing. You're going to have to address that. They have been more than willing to listen to everything that I have to say. I've followed their board meetings and so forth. Maybe why I am so protective of them, if that's the word. But I think the other thing is that I saw over the last years the changes that the railroad has made in its operations, and I see that those changes have been made because they are free to make those as board decisions and so forth. One of the issues that came forward was the Comfort Inn purchase. I was terribly upset about that. I still, even though they might disagree with me, that there was not even just a perceived notion that they were unfairly competing with private industry, which want to keep that keep that at bay. But as a result of that, they changed their policy. They'll never do one of those kinds of arrangements whereby they put the property up for security and became a partnership in the hotel, which in a essentially did make the other partners in the hotel have a special deal that no one else had. And so that certainly was a violation of, I believe, competing. Putting the land up for lease, at fair market lease, and allowing anyone to come in and get it is not necessarily competing unfairly with the private sector. If the only consideration that you think unfairly competing is the fact that the railroad has better land than is across the street or over there, then of course it could be perceived that they are unfairly competing with the fellow that has land over there. But if anyone else besides the railroad owned that land, it would be the same competition. So I guess my biggest concern is, and I do see a problem, if we're appropriating the budget, and we have to appropriate the budget, and we do it on a fiscal year ending June 30, and they have a calendar year that ends December 31, I see a flaw in that whole process. If all you're going to do is say that whatever the railroad needs is appropriated, then that is a sham. If you're not going to look at the line items of what is in the budget and make decisions, and then one more thing before you get a chance to respond is that the railroad has been making a profit. The money that they're getting from the federal government is a share of a pot of money available for passenger services. So it's not that they're getting an extra piece of money from the government or costing the government more. They're getting a share of what was already out there for the rest. And I applaud them for being able to do it. They didn't qualify before, now they do. But they have been taking in more cash than they've been spending on an annual basis. If we were under the Executive Budget Act, what would and could the legislature do with those extra funds?
Madam Chair, to answer your last question first, whether they're under the Executive Budget Act or not, I believe the legislature if it's the legislature's will to extract anything from the corporation, I believe they have the power to do that now, whether they're subject to the Executive Budget Act or not. I believe that ability is there at any point in time if it's the will of the legislature. So the Budget Act wouldn't necessarily drive that one way or another. I believe that's an inherent power of the legislature to begin with. You mentioned the broad language of the current front section that the House put in, and I believe you characterized it as a sham, that it's wide open. If all we're going to do is come down and drop that in as a token gesture of complying with the Constitution and appropriation and all of that, I might tend to agree with you. But that's why I believe it needs to go hand in hand with the Executive Budget Act process, where we deliberate, where we review and we discuss and have an understanding of what their proposed budget is. But then we turn around, and as we do many times with many agencies, we set appropriation levels at a low level if we have concerns on agencies, or at a high level if we have a relative range of comfort that we have faith in their ability to administer that appropriation at a very high level. So what we're doing with the railroad is the Budget Act would provide that basis for discussion and understanding of what's in their budget, but then giving them the flexibility to operate by that very language.
Okay, I'm getting the picture. And having been in the legislature, this is my fifth session, and the legislature does have the power of appropriation, and they use it to get everything they want. In fact, as the public understands that the legislature has the authority to appropriate, when they don't like what Fish and Game is doing somewhere, someone irritates some private people, they say to the legislature, cut their budget. It doesn't make any difference what agency is out there. If they don't like the way they're doing it, the people say, cut the budget, and the legislature says, that's our authority, we can cut the budget. What happens sometimes, they will cut the budget. The people come in and say, well, what did I do wrong? I'll change my change. I won't do that anymore. Okay, but whatever. That's what you want the railroad to be under the Executive Budget Act for, is so you have that little oversight that says, if you don't like what they're doing, you have the right then to take that out of the budget. My point is, we can do that now. I have been successful in doing that by working with the railroad. I have found them to be very responsive to every concern that I've had. I agree with the people here from the union who testified that they have a PR problem. I have been telling them that for 5 years, and I've been telling them they should have a PR person to feel out the problems in the public and bring them back to the board so that they can address them. They are a public corporation. They do need to have the public support. They can't just be arrogant and say, we're here, we're protected, and so therefore what you say doesn't matter. I think they understand that, and I think we're moving in the right direction. I think that when you put them under this, what I see, people get suspicious. We have about six or seven bills on the legislative plate this year that all take a hit at employee rights, or employee rights that they've had, either their wages or their benefits or their something. The employees in this state, both union and non-union, are rising up and says, why are you an anti-worker legislature? There is a message that we send, and I think we do need to have, when we do things in the legislature, we need to bring the people along with us on this issue so that we don't make rash decisions that take care of things with a machete. So I can see, I understand now, and I'm glad you're here to define what this, because I questionly in my mind, why do they want to do this? I think I see why now, and I think there is another solution, and I think that might be the right way, and I'll talk to you about it later, too, and I really appreciate you coming by today.
Madam Chair, and I agree with everything you've said about the communication and the improvement at the railroad. I have met with Governor Sheffield myself, and we've discussed it. I believe there was in the past an arrogance there at the railroad, and I believe the governor is intent on changing that. So, and we have seen that just in our, the audit division's relationship with the railroad, we've seen that change. But that still, I don't know that that necessarily satisfies the greater legislative oversight process, but I'd be happy
to discuss it with you. And I understand that, and I understand why you are going that way. Let me say that I am not opposed to someday selling a railroad. In fact, it may be that someday we will want to sell the railroad. There may be 30, 40 years from now we'll be connected to the lower 48 and we'll have a longer railroad. So I'm not opposed to selling the railroad. I'm opposed to giving it away. And what I want to do with the railroad, from my own personal opinion, is keep it the best operating, the most effective and efficient railroad there is. And by tell you that I feel very nervous taking the legislative attitudes and putting them into that process, because I've seen the legislative attitudes. Quite frankly, it scares me too. So to make it be perfectly frank, I'm coming from on this issue.
Well, and Madam Chairman, to be perfectly frank, I don't believe we know nearly enough about the railroad to be discussing selling it yet.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that. I think we do need to know more. So thank you very much. Is there anyone else that has anything here that wanted to make any statement or question? I thank you all for coming. This has been a difficult issue for lots of people, and I feel much better about this whole thing. I'm sure glad you came today, Randy. So we'll set this issue aside now, and we'll get on with Mr. Martin's, Representative Martin's bill on reports to records and state agencies. I think, Representative Martin, you might have one we really like.
Oh.
Representative Dyson?
Amazing. I have a conflict in it. I'm on resources, and I'd certainly like to see a part of the hearing on the board member thing upstairs. And it seems to me that my disappearing here, even for a few minutes, makes this even more difficult for you to conduct business. And I'm
well, I've been thinking about that too, Representative Dyson, and I really wanted to move Representative Martin's bill out here this morning. I don't have the votes to do that, and I thought maybe I could gather some if we could get some testimony, and then I could round up some people to come and help me move it. It's a good bill. So if you want to go listen, and I'll listen here, and then if I need you for a vote, would you please come back?
Yes, ma'am.
For those people on testimony on the teleconference, thank you very much for being here. We're going on to another bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Martin, go ahead.
This bill has actually been about 6 years in making. It began on the Governor Hickel's reign as governor, and they really want to clean up the amount of annual reports demanded by the legislature. So I've had that legislation for some time, and last year we began looking into the various reports. The details were worked out by OMB and by the state organization, which I'm really extremely pleased with, because they did a yeoman's job. From what began at about 90 annual reports, and that's not all we do, they knocked it down to about 43 reports you have here that everyone has concluded should be eliminated. Because if you want efficiency, if you want to stop wasting government, this is a major, major way of doing it. And you know as well as I do the annual reports we get from everything and anything. I think this would make a very efficient statement. We don't know how much money it will save. We know it will be a time save of energy and money and everything else. So with that, basically, we're just going to say that there's 43 reports to be eliminated annually. We did get the latest thing to show you what good communications we have from OMB and a lady named Angela, who's done a fabulous job on all these details and talking to all the department and agencies. And they have asked for a correction, Madam Chairman, of the latest decision. And I think you have that email in your packet. And it's our request that you consider a committee substitute. And Mr. Knight's been doing the details on that. So with the email, I think that everyone's 100% on, you know, starting now and immediately receive the savings in next year's budgets.
Let me tell you what I think we'll do. I think if you have a suggested CS that we would ask you to bring that, we can move this right out on Thursday, morning.
Yes, ma'am, that has
to be. That'd be through that line. So you bring us the CS. And
that was made out of yesterday.
Thursday's our last State Affairs meeting this year. And I do have this. Oh, it's here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can we round up some voters?
Yeah, we've got the Hodges maybe coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Dyson, maybe we'll come back.
Both of them are in oil and gas right now.
We didn't come out.
So they could just come for a minute to so we can.
Well,
BZ?
I'll look upstairs for BZ.
Let's have an at ease until meeting. We'll do it Thursday. I'm not going to.